Hello and welcome to MassageTherapyRadio.com, sponsors of the Florida State Massage Therapy Association's annual convention. I'm Jim Smythe and I'll be your host today, along with my co-host Don Dillon. Our special guest is Judith Delaney, who will be discussing tenderly touching the TM joint. This is the second interview in a series of presenter interviews that Massage Therapy Radio is hosting in conjunction with the Florida State Massage Therapy Association's annual convention, held July 8 to 12, at the Omni Orlando Resort. I would like to remind all our listeners that the early bird registration for the FSMTA convention ends on May 4th. And after that registration date, the fee goes up $100. So be sure to register right away to get the early bird deal. And I would like to thank our sponsor, Know Your Body Best. Be sure to click on the link on the landing page to check out all the fantastic products that they offer, and to help you build your massage therapy business. Now, these broadcasts will be about 30 minutes long, and you'll have the opportunity to ask Judith questions during the interview. If you have a question for Judith, simply submit it in the Q&A box on the broadcast page with your name and location, and we'll do our best to answer as many questions as possible. In this interview, Judith will discuss the factors that create or intensify TM joint dysfunction. We will also discuss common dental conditions that affect the musculature and the function of the TM joint, teeth and jaw. The degenerative processes associated with the TM joint disease will also be explored. We will touch on some anatomy, physiology, and the function and dysfunction of the TM joint, as well as on common pain syndromes. Developer of NMT American version, Judith has over two decades of experience as an educator in an international multidisciplinary environment. Her collaborative writing efforts with Dr. Leon Chaitow have resulted in three significant neuromuscular therapy textbooks. She also serves as an advisory board member for the Journal of Bodywork and Movement Therapies. And as a visionary, Judith's ongoing efforts in the massage field have helped to form bridges between conventional and complementary medicines, providing an atmosphere where massage can be integrated into any medical setting. In addition, Judith is the keynote speaker for the FSMTA convention this year. Judith, welcome to Massage Therapy Radio. It's wonderful to have you with us tonight.
Well, thank you. It's great to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you. And why don't we just jump right into our topic? Can you tell us a little bit about your background in this subject area?
Well, Jim, during high school, I had an afternoon job as a dental assistant to a general dentist. We did a little bit of everything. And I worked with him for over 7 years, and I learned a lot because he loved to teach as he treated. I also worked in our dental lab, and sometimes I made the splints that the oral surgeon next door used after his surgery. He, too, loved to explain his cases, and I was eager to understand. I was really fascinated by the mechanics of the jaw. So when I studied NMT many years later, the treatment of this joint was already familiar to me, the applications to it, and it kind of became a specialty for me.
That's excellent beginning, an excellent background beginning. And what exactly is TMJ dysfunction?
Well, TMJ stands for the temporomandibular joint. And dysfunction means basically that the joint is impaired in some way. It's kind of a vague term since it doesn't really define what is not functioning and or the degree to which it's not functioning only tells us that something is abnormal. We have a TM joint on each side right in front of the ear. And these two joints will work together to allow our jaw to open and close. And the mandible has on it a condyle, kind of a rounded protrusion, and that fits into a fossa or an indentation on the temporal bone. Lying between those two surfaces is an articular disc. Now, the disc is designed to move along with the condyle down that sloped surface on the temporal bone and then allow the jaw to hinge open. That opens the mouth, and then the reverse is the way that we close it. But, of course, there are a lot of muscles involved that produce these movements and several others. Because this is a complex joint, there are a number of problems that can develop. And this includes hypertonic muscles that will reduce the range of motion that the mouth can open. It could include changes in the position of the disc on the condyle or changes in the shape of the disc, deterioration of the condyle, of the cartilage, or of the disc itself. And then we could also have referred pain from trigger points in the muscles of chewing or from the neck muscles. And speaking of the neck, it's really important in this condition. And in fact, sometimes this condition is referred to as cervicocraniomandibular dysfunction, or CCMD. Of course, if I were to name it, I'd probably call it plantar sacrocervicocraniomandibular dysfunction, because the structure of the whole body, from the foot, the plantar surface, into the pelvis, and right on up, all of those play a role in how that jaw hangs on the face.
Yes, we have some charts at my particular clinic, and when the pelvis is out of alignment, it certainly can tilt the jaw out of alignment.
Mm-hmm.
So how can this condition affect the rest of the body or the person themselves?
Well, first and foremost, of course, the ability to open the mouth comfortably. If it won't open well, then that affects eating and talking, and that's two of our favorite things to do in life. So that would be first, but sometimes the jaw will be affected and there'll be no pain. Sometimes it's so slowly that the person doesn't even notice it. Sometimes it's abruptly when a trauma hits the area. Sometimes there's no noticeable loss range of motion and yet tremendous pain in the face or even on the side of the head. Sometimes there'll be accompanying toothache or difficulty to chew. Other times there might be an annoying pop or a click that even you can hear across the room. It can also affect the biting surfaces of the teeth so that the way they fit together, that's called the occlusion, can result in the teeth striking each other inappropriately. And that can result in tooth sensitivity or sensitivity to hot, to cold, to pressure. And there's even research evidence. There was a group, Fink et al., a group of dentists, that published in the Journal of Craniomandibular Practice in 2003. And they did some research on the biting surface of the teeth and showed that it can refer directly into the neck, causing cervical dysfunction. They showed that the tooth surface can cause the SI joints to lock and not function appropriately.
Did you say SI joints?
The sacroiliac joints.
Oh, yeah.
So it can refer all the way down to the lower back. And they even showed that the adductors in the inner thigh lost nearly 2 inches of range of motion within an hour after a high filling placed on the tooth surfaces. So it could have a long-reaching effect down the body. That same group and that same issue of cranio also showed that the biting surface can affect weight bearing on the feet. So it can actually alter the center of gravity and therefore change the way the posture aligns over the feet. So all of that together implies a body-wide influence from the oral cavity.
That's amazing. I normally look at things from the feet up, but obviously it can cause disruption from the head down.
It can go both ways.
Mm-hmm. So this is probably a redundant question then, but why is TMJ soft tissue therapy important?
Well, the soft tissues, there are a number of muscles that cross the joint, and they act to open and close it. They also protrude the jaw forward and retract it back and move it from side to side. Now, we may not think we do those movements very often, but actually when we chew and eat, the jaw is moving all over the place. So these are often very small muscles. They're not very large. But together, they can exert almost as much pressure per square inch as the large quadriceps on the front of the thigh. So they're very, very powerful muscles. Now, beyond the obvious losing range of motion or associated, sometimes debilitating pain, there can be other negative influences as well. You see, there's a nerve that supplies the face and the teeth as well called the trigeminal nerve.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a little feedback loop that signals directly into the cervical region, so it can talk directly to the cervical muscles and cause them to tighten and the cervical to become dysfunctional. And then there's another slip that goes into a portion of the brain that drives the limbic system. Now, we don't know a whole lot about the limbic system, but what has been discovered about it so far shows that it has effect on fatigue, pain, sleep, memory, attention, weight, appetite, libido, respiration, temperature, blood pressure, mood, the immune system, the endocrine system. I mean, it is a master controlling system for much of the body's functions. And so any kind of spillover that has a direct input into that could have substantial impact on the person's health and their quality of life.
That's now, is this theoretical? Wrong. Is this theoretical, or is
oh,
this
no.
been
oh,
tested?
Oh, no, that's
in
out, that's out there. It's referenced pretty strongly in my textbook. I'll give you the name of the textbook in a little bit.
Great. So how long have you been working with this protocol of therapy?
Let's see. This is my 25th year as an NMT practitioner. I've been teaching the protocol for almost that long, and in addition to presenting it within the massage field throughout the U.S., I've also presented it as a topic to a wide range of professions and locations. For instance, the Florida Dental Hygiene Association, Florida Chiropractic Association, the Institute for Craniomandibular Medicine in Germany, Japan Osteopathic College in Tokyo, the National Training Center in Dublin, and for a closed class for PTs and DOs in Stockholm, Sweden. So that shows there's an interest worldwide, and it's multidisciplinary. And my thought is that if a massage therapist can do this work well, they can interface with all of these professions. They can at least get their foot through the door with the intraoral protocols, with the craniofacial work.
Those were so you've been traveling quite a bit over
oh, yeah.
your career.
Oh yeah,
and good for you.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and the people are very, very eager, not only to learn, but they have so much to share. So I learn almost as much as I can take with me when I go to these.
As a massage therapist, do they meet you on a level plane?
Oh sure, I'm a peer.
Great.
Particularly outside the U.S.
Excellent. And how do you suggest a screening test for TMJ dysfunction?
Well, there are a number of tests that can be performed and should be performed, some by the therapist. There are a whole battery of tests that might be performed by the dentist. But one way that we can easily check for a lost range of motion of the joint is to use our non-dominant hand, the one that we don't write with, and just take your hand for a second and curl the fingers in to kind of make a fist. And then hold it so that your thumb is pointing toward the floor. Okay? Now turn that fist around like you're almost going to punch yourself in the nose, so your fist is pointing toward your own mouth. Your index finger now is pointing toward the floor along with the thumb, so place it on the lower teeth, your lower front teeth, and then open your mouth and see how many knuckles you can easily slide between your upper and lower teeth. Okay? A minimum of 2 should easily fit in, and that means that you actually could use improvement, but minimum of 2. And if it goes all the way to 3, that would be ideal. Now, if it's more than 3, that could imply that either that joint itself is hypermobile, which probably won't show up like that because the muscles will tighten up to try to stabilize it, but that is a test, a screening test, for general hypermobility, or what is sometimes called ligamentous laxity for the whole body. And that's a complex condition because it can affect bones all over the body. Now, you can use that measurement. Let's say somebody comes in and you're going to start your treatment. So you just have them do, we call that the three-knuckle test, and you check how wide it opens, and then do your protocol, and then check at the end how wide it opens. And it gives you a pretty immediate feedback of the range of motion and whether your work was effective. Now, what we try to do is get people to a point where they can open 3 knuckles comfortably without a lot of popping and clicking. It isn't always accomplished just with neuromuscular therapy or with soft tissue care. A lot of times there has to be dental interventions along with it, and sometimes physical therapy, sometimes cranial work, and so forth. But once we get them to a comfortable and good opening distance, then the person can use that same measuring device anytime. I mean, it's right there. It's handy. They've got it at the end of their arm. And they can just check every once in a while, how's my range of motion? Oops, starting to tighten back up again. Better get back in for a treatment. Or apply the treatment for themselves. Actually, there are a couple muscles they can do for themselves.
That's an interesting way to do a measurement, very straightforward and easy to do.
You could also use millimeter rulers. There's something called a Bowley gauge that's in dentistry, and there's a little TMJ measuring device. You could use all of those, but this one, quick, easy, always there, and it gives us our functional range.
Now, should the knuckles fit right in between the teeth, or just the bare edge mean that?
Right. But make sure the fingers are going vertical. Let's see. It's kind of hard to explain. I guess the real tip is that when it meets the mouth, your thumb is pointing down toward the floor. Then you have your hand in the right direction. You're not trying to put your whole fist in your mouth. You're actually trying to do the range of the knuckles from the index finger to the ring finger.
Right. Mm-hmm. I'm sure everyone's tried it just like I just tried it. How complicated is the hands-on for this particular technique, your neuromuscular therapy approach?
Well, actually, the NMT intraoral protocol is quite easy to perform. What's tough about it is learning the anatomy. Once you know the anatomy of the area, just doing the step-by-step protocol is very simple. These muscles are not usually taught in massage school, so most people don't commonly know them. We don't commonly go around and stick our finger in other people's mouths. You know, mommy said that's not a good thing to do, so we stopped doing that about kindergarten. So learning how to actually enter the mouth and work in the oral cavity, how to protect yourself and the patient, and the safe places that you can touch those membranes, that's really important. The routine itself, really easy to learn. But many steps are applied to muscles that are not much bigger than the tip of the finger. So being in the right spot is really crucial, or you'll completely miss the muscle. So knowing the anatomy is what I would say would be the tougher part.
Okay, so the technique is fairly easy to learn then.
Very straightforward.
Oh, that's good.
And at the FSMTA convention, we're actually going to do all of the intraoral, well, no, not all of the intraoral work, most of the intraoral work on ourselves. So during the course of the afternoon, we're going to stick our finger in there and poke around and touch our own masseter and lateral pterygoid, temporalis tendon. There are a couple of them we probably won't do because when you're sitting up and you touch up in the roof of the mouth, it tends to stimulate the gag reflex. So if somebody decides to try those steps, at least we'll know who's doing it. Because there's a pretty immediate effect. Once the person lays down, tilts their head back, breathes through their mouth, we might even tap on their temples to disengage the gag reflex. Then we can go into that soft palate, I would say on 90% of people, without instigating that gagging. But at the conference, we won't be lying down. We'll be doing it sitting up. So we'll get through most of the routine on ourselves, though. And I'll show the rest of it on video live, you know, so you can see how it's being done.
Well, that should be very informative. At this point, I'd just like to remind our listeners that we have about 10 minutes left. And if you'd like to send us your questions, simply enter your name, location, and submit your question in the box provided. Just use the question box on the page and click submit, and we'll get to as many questions as possible before we finish the call. What other modalities might you use in addition to NMT to work the jaw?
It interfaces very well with cranial techniques, and I commonly use lymphatic drainage before I work and then again after I've worked. As mentioned earlier, the cervical routine or treatment of the neck and particularly the base of the occiput should be done. Postural corrections, whether they're stemming from the feet, the pelvis, or the neck, should be addressed, and especially forward head posture, because that plays a role in how the mandible positions itself on the face. So I would put that as a foremost part of the work. And as you mentioned earlier, in fact, things start at the feet and come up. So the foot mechanics need to be considered. You know, a fallen arch in one foot can definitely affect the TM joint on that side of the face. There are some other techniques like spray and stretch that's been shown to be extremely effective. Dr. Janet Travell used that a lot for trigger points, but it also can be used to release the muscles, just general hypertonicity. And then there are products that can be applied like anti-inflammatories and certainly biofreeze and other counter irritants can increase or prolong the effectiveness of the routine. But this more than any other part of the body, I think, is a multidisciplinary problem. So other things that might need to be addressed include hormonal dietary. You know, a lot of neurostimulants in the diet tend to bring on teeth clenching, emotional components that cause us to clench our teeth and be stressed, you know, that can wind up in tightening the jaw muscles. Breathing and swallowing patterns need to be looked at, and, you know, there are a lot of influences like that. And, of course, there are dental components. I think we shouldn't even attempt to do this work without having some kind of dental interface, or at least not any prolonged work with it. If you do a session or two and everything corrects, then it was totally myofascial. But most of the time, there's a dental component, and that could be, you know, from loss of vertical dimension, deterioration of the joint, poor occlusion, orthodontic issues. You know, all of those would need to be addressed by a dental professional.
It sounds like a very complicated area. Should massage therapists even be treating the TM joint?
I want to scream out, yeah, absolutely they should, but I think I should preface that with a few words of caution. This joint is a delicate joint, and there are a lot of considerations and precautions when working with it. Appropriate, advanced technique to know where to work, when not to work, where not to touch, how to handle that potential gagging or, you know, worse if you go down too deeply, and when and where to refer the person are all really important considerations. I do believe that the untrained hands that venture into this particular region could potentially, even if unintentionally, do harm. So intraoral and extraoral training and understanding the role that the neck and the pelvis and all of those things play should be obtained, and that should be with qualified, experienced instructors, and particularly people who are experienced in temporomandibular joint management of patients. And I think that's part of our ethical responsibility as practitioners, that we have the adequate training. I'm not sure that just reading a chapter in a book, even a good book, is enough. I like to have people do their work with someone tableside who knows what they're doing.
Is that why the topic is basically tenderly touch the TM joint?
Yes, because that joint can be excruciatingly tender, even on someone who's experiencing no pain. The lateral pterygoid works with almost every movement of the jaw. So it tends to be extremely tender, and we use a very, very delicate touch with these tissues.
Yes, I understand exactly what you're saying. I have a client, and I worked inside her mouth, and I had a little too much pressure. She'll let me work outside her mouth now, but she won't let me work inside anymore.
Mm-hmm. It has to be delicate. So, and what could be, you know, 2 pounds of pressure for one person might need to be 2 ounces with another. So you always go in with the much lighter pressure and gradually increase it only if it's appropriate to do so. And because we've got our hands in their mouth, they can't even say, hey, stop that. You know, you almost have to have hand signals to imply increase your pressure, decrease your pressure, stop, get out of there, I'm going to punch you, you know,
yes, things like that.
So,
absolutely.
Yeah, those hand signals. Sometimes you'll see their eyes enlarge and you know, oh, I better stop right now. I better find out what's going on.
Absolutely. I learned my lesson. Well, now I'm going to touch base with our co-host, Don Dillon, and see what our listeners are asking.
Thanks, Jim. Judith, we've had a number of very good questions, mostly related to the relationship between the cervical spine and the temporomandibular joint. And you've answered that, I think, quite thoroughly early in the interview. So I'm going to pull 2 questions from a different point of view. One is, this is from Christine from Parsippany, wants to know if you, in the presentation, if you'll be addressing myofascial traces that refer into the TMJ joint. And the second question is more of a business question from Sherry from Illinois, and she asks, how can I best market my services to the medical and dental communities?
Okay. Well, let's start with that first one again. We have a 3-hour presentation at the FSMTA convention. So I will certainly cover as much as I possibly can. Right now I have the presentation designed to at least show the referred patterns from the cervical region and upper trapezius, maybe even from the soleus down in the leg has a referred pattern into the jaw. So I'm going to have those in the PowerPoints and talk about those a little bit. We will talk about the role that trigger points play in pain production. And then, of course, the muscles of the temporomandibular joint themselves, every single one of those will be spotlighted in this. So you will see and we will discuss the trigger points, as the pain and those kind of patterns are well known. But then there are a few others like sensations or ringing in the ear, tinnitus or tinnitus, is also produced by some of the muscles. So I'll have succinct lists of those, and we'll discuss some of the, you know, more obscure things, swallowing difficulties that are brought on by these muscles and the neck muscles. Now, as far as marketing, once you have a really good understanding of the joint and some of the dental components, then I think knocking on doors with the dentist becomes a reasonable and very prudent thing to do. You notice in my list I mentioned the Dental Hygiene Association, because I think the dental hygienists are an excellent group to share your information. They see the dental patient 2, 3, sometimes 4 times a year for their cleanings. And the dentist may not see them at all for 2 or 3 years, maybe even longer if the person's not having a problem, other than to come in and say, hi, how you doing? So the dental hygienist is in a good position to be able to screen the muscles. You could teach the dental hygienist 2 or 3 of the screening steps. And when he or she is finding muscles that are involved, then referring over to you for the follow-through would be an excellent idea. I would also suggest that you show them how to spot forward head posture and tilting pelvis, because those, you know, they're not going to have their shoes off. You're not going to be able to look for the fallen arches in the dental office, although I know dentists who do. But for the most part, they can easily have the person stand up, or as they stand up to leave, or as they come in, they can notice if their head is in a forward posture or some basic, you know, obvious postural distortions. And some dental hygienists and dentists also know cranial therapy, and they can spot cranial lesions. So as they screen through those, they're probably not going to have time to do a hands-on appointment right in their office. They might want to hire the massage therapist to work in the office, maybe 1 or 2 days a week, and schedule patients actually with them right there in the dental office. Some dentists are very aware and open to trigger point treatment. Dr. Janet Travell, who is probably the foremost authority on trigger points, she and Dr. David Simons co-authored 2 monumental textbooks on them. She presented to the dental profession a lot, and in fact, Dr. Parker Mahan from University of Florida area, Gainesville area, the Mahan Facial Pain Center, he wrote her first foreword, so dentists are keenly aware of this work. And out of all the physicians that I have had refer to me, dentists have been very open-minded, very often will come in for therapy themselves. They often spot not only dental problems, but maybe even just listening to the patient will hear that they're having problems in other parts of their body as well. So they tend to be a very keen on particularly neuromuscular therapy. So I think they would be open-minded. Developing a brochure or an article or something like that that you can hand to them would be good. And then I suggest that you offer, whether you make it complimentary professional session or discounted or not, I often have offered a professional courtesy session. And if the doctor himself or herself does not want or need the session, make sure they know they can pass it on. Wife, husband, child, front desk person, because once that person goes back and says, wow, this really took care of my headache, my aching shoulder, all those things I've been complaining to you about, I'm getting better, then that may get their attention.
Excellent. Thank you, Judith. Back to you, Jim.
Thanks, Don. Now, Judith, are there some articles or textbooks that you would suggest for this topic?
There's going to be an article in the July issue of Massage Message magazine that I wrote. It's got about maybe 10 graphics in it and is a pretty good size. It not only has the joint structure, but it also, I included how to treat masseter because it's quite simple to do on ourselves, and it's something that not only can we do, but we can pass it on to the people who are seeing us. So that's the convention issue, the July issue. It should come out sometime in late June. For those that are interested in a longer discussion on the TM joint, the cervical region, and even other applications to the cranium, I suggest the book that I co-authored with Dr. Chaito, Clinical Application of Neuromuscular Techniques. Volume 1 is the upper body, and we wrote the first copy of that was published in 2000, but it has now come out in a second edition. So you definitely want the second edition. It has about an extra 150 pages, and the portion that I contributed on the TM joint is definitely an upgrade from the first edition. That's co-authored with, as I said, Dr. Chaito, and he has written somewhere around 70 or 80 books in his lifetime on all kinds of body-wide problems and health issues, and one of those is a cranial text from an osteopathic point of view. So his cranial book is, again, I think it's just come out in a new edition as well. There are also a number of journals in the dental field that I routinely go to, check out, or look up online, but there's one that I've subscribed to for about a decade, and that is the one that I mentioned earlier that Dr. Fink and his group published their work in, and it's commonly called Cranio because those are the big letters you see across the front, but its official name is the Journal of Craniomandibular Practice, and they have a fair amount of articles that consider the influences of muscles and the rest of the body on cranial and craniomandibular conditions, and now I might go two issues and have nothing that I really personally can use, but I still try to skim the articles, or sometimes I read them at depth, and sometimes I read them over and over. But I like to be aware of what is being published in there. That is definitely my favorite dental journal. I haven't seen all of them in the world, but that is certainly one of my favorites.
Is it a monthly or a quarterly?
It comes out every 3 months. I think it's a quarterly. It runs around, around $110 for the year.
And they'll probably have a website or something that someone could go to and...
They do. I think if you Google the Journal of Craniomandibular Practice, you'll find it pretty easily. The last time I checked, now it's been about a year since I checked, they didn't have their articles online where you could get, you know, PDF copies or order back issues that way. But they may have that now because I did call them and ask if that was going to be done soon, and they were either thinking about it or had it in the works. So it may be available actually as an online journal at this point. A lot of journals are going that way so that they save the paper and the postage and the cost of sending out and preserving planetary resources. That's a very good thing. Sometimes you get the mail-out copy and a copy online. I really like the online stuff because I can then search for keywords within the article. Another way to find, if you want academic material, you want referenced articles rather than casual websites, there is a website that a lot of people don't know about, but it's the sister of one that we all use. The one we all use is Google. But there is a Google site called Scholar, S-C-H-O-L-A-R, .google.com. Or if you're on the Google site, just pull down under the More button and you'll find Scholar Google. And when you go to Scholar Google, you're going to get academic articles and like university websites, edu websites, government websites, very reliable material. It'll usually be well-referenced or well-developed, and it's not just opinionated things that people can, you know, type in because they own the site. These really have to pass academic scrutiny. So if you want, like I said, more scholarly work, it's scholar.google.com.
Well, that's great information. Thank you very much.
Now, a lot of those will only be abstracts. You may not be able to get the full article, But usually the abstract will tell you what it's about, and if it's something, of course, if you're writing an article, you could probably purchase it. There are different ways to buy or contact the publisher. You could also take the title of the article and put that in a regular Google search, and you may find a website where it's posted. You know, maybe the author was allowed to post. And so there are even ways to get it once it's on, if it's only an abstract, there still may be ways to get it without cost. And then there's always the cost way. A lot of journals sell their articles for $20, $30 for an article. That's a lot if you're having to pay a lot for, you know, if you need 5 or 10, then that could be a lot of money spent. But there are many, many ways to get what you need,
okay,
even academically, without paying out.
Well, excellent. Thank you very much for that information.
Mm-hmm.
From me and our listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think we've just received a late question. I'm going to ask you to respond to this question just before we wrap up. Lil from Providence has a client that when lying down, they cannot swallow. And would you have any idea what could cause this or what can be done for this?
Well, Lil, that I have a patient who question is often given, you know, in class or, in this case, over the phone. And I don't have the enough information to be able to adequately or even appropriately respond to it. I don't have a case history. I don't know what tests have been done. It is possible that there is a tumor on the anterior neck or a disc that is bulging anteriorly, that when the person is lying face up, the esophagus is falling against that, and then they're not able to swallow. But for me not to know, have they been screened by a doctor? What was the diagnosis? If they haven't been screened by a doctor, anything that is potentially pathological, I would say should be referred to a physician to rule out a serious pathology. I'm real keen on the visceral pathology being first and foremost. So in this particular case, if they've already been through all of that, then we might start working with the cervical region, look at whether there's excessive lordosis, maybe a disc is bulging anteriorly, decreasing tension in the back of the neck might help to reduce that. But I would be more concerned that there could be an anterior cervical tumor, an esophageal tumor, or something else that once they're lying in that position, even if they're heavily weighted and there's a lot of fat on the anterior neck, adipose tissue there, then that could create almost like apnea kind of response, so they might have difficulty swallowing from the weight imposed upon it. There just isn't quite enough information here for me to guide further than that, but I think the most important point I can make is always rule out a serious visceral problem first.
Well, that's very good advice.
Yeah, then you can go on with your work.
Well, we still have some questions coming in, Judith, but our time is running out. So, do you have anything you'd like to say as a wrap up?
Yes, bring all those questions to the FSMTA convention in July, 8th through 11th, and we can answer them in class, or if you see me in the elevator, or don't ask them during the keynote. I think we're going to be too busy with other topics then, but otherwise, yes, bring them along, and we'll take a stab at them there. Or at any class, I am teaching the cervical cranium and TMJ class in Hawaii in August. That would be a fun place to ask those questions.
I'm sure everybody would like to be in Hawaii. Well, if you'd like to see Judith and any of the other remarkable presenters at the FSMTA Annual Convention, July 8 to 12 at the Omni Orlando Resort, please click on the links to the website that you'll find on the Massage Therapy Radio homepage. And remember, you can save $100 off your registration by getting in on the early bird by May 4th. Judith, thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today and for sharing your wisdom and insights. We're really looking forward to seeing you present at the FSMTA convention.
Well, thank you so much.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. And be sure to tune in when our second series of FSMTA interviews begin on May 29th with George Kouselios and on June 4, Richard Rossiter. Both of these will air at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And join us May 7th for an interview with Jeremy Quisnell, Education Services Planner for the Ontario Massage Therapist Association. During that interview, we'll be discussing a profession and its crossroads. That will also air at 9 p.m. This is Jim Smythe on behalf of my co-host Don Dillon and our partners at MassageTherapyRadio.com. I would like to thank all our listeners who tuned in today, and thank you for all your questions. We'll see you in Florida. Have a fabulous day.